So thanks so much. Great to be here, and appreciate our somewhat sarcastic but very capable moderator keeping us all on task. So I'm going to talk just a little bit about something that put Massachusetts on the map just a couple of years ago. But I'm happy to say that I don't think we're the only ones on the map currently. I think things are moving in the right direction across the country. So I think Chris mentioned I'm Suzanne Condon. I'm Associate Commissioner of Public Health in the state of Massachusetts, and my primary focus areas are directing the Bureau of Environmental Health programs, but also establishing a very exciting new office in Massachusetts, which is the Office of Local and Regional Health, trying to pull all of our players together. I think you might recall that Ben mentioned we have some 351 local public health agencies, and so trying to keep us all together is sometimes a trick. So I'm going to be clear about my relationships. Clearly, I work for government, so I don't have a lot of financial interest in any of the work that we do, other than paying my own bills as a result of getting a paycheck from the government. So I think we're clear on that. Just a quick outline of the talk. I just want to touch a little bit on transportation reform in Massachusetts and why this has been so exciting to be in the field of public health during this time of really incredible movement, both in our administration and the state legislature. I talk a little bit about baseline conditions of a particular health impact assessment that we conducted, which was a pilot test for our transportation reform. Pathways and indicators evaluated in the assessment of health impacts, findings and recommendations of the HIA that we conducted, and then summary and next steps, where are we at now? In June of 2009, Governor Deval Patrick signed the Transportation Reform Law, also known as Mass General Law Chapter 6C. Here's the governor. He's an incredible public health guy, by the way. I was at a meeting with him less than a week ago where he was asking specifically about the impacts of climate change on the shellfish industry in our state, on beaches and local waterways, recreational waterways. So he's very engaged in public health. But in full disclosure, the primary reason that the governor wanted to reform transportation in Massachusetts was because, as you all recall, we were in that period of economic decline and things weren't so great in Massachusetts or almost anywhere else in the country. And so he wanted to reduce duplicative efforts and enhance transportation planning. He thought this would be a way to achieve maximum efficiency in the transportation world. And as my good colleague Chris Hager mentioned, when she was with the state legislature, oh yeah, they add their own stuff. So when the either the administration or the legislature comes out with a proposed piece of legislation, the other wants to engage and see if they can make the slightly imperfect perfect. And so thus came the new section in the Transportation Reform Law, which was the Healthy Transportation Compact. So they established a compact. And essentially, there are six members of that compact, and just to give you a flavor for the high, high level of involvement across the administration, of those six members, three of them are cabinet secretaries. And so the Secretary of Health and Human Services co-chairs the Transportation Compact along with the Secretary of Transportation. The Secretary of Energy and Environmental Affairs is also a member, as is the Commissioner of Public Health. And then I believe it's economic development and highway. So six very powerful people in government. So that's what the compact's composed of. But this particular law directed us to establish methods to implement the use of health impact assessments, or HIAs, to determine the effect of transportation projects on public health and vulnerable populations. So they basically turn things upside down on the transportation planners. Okay, you're going to really look at health from now on when you look at this. And then the compact, with many of us as staff to the compact, is required to institute that HIA for use by planners, transportation administrators, public health administrators, and developers. I think it's fair to say that transportation planning projects often have a range of health implications that aren't uniformly covered, but Massachusetts is one of 26 states across the country that actually have funding from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control to develop environmental public health tracking portals. So this is basically establishing readily available data for both health and environmental data that can be used by a variety of different folks for different projects. I would be somewhat disingenuous if I didn't say that several of us sat around a room for the first few months trying to figure out how the heck we were going to do this. There's nobody gave us a recipe. We had the great Andy Dannenberg who told us all what's important about HIAs and representing CDC well. But, you know, it's sort of like anything that happens government, particularly during a period of economic decline, well, who's going to pay for it? Where are you going to get the money? How much does it cost? And so luckily for us, as many of you probably know, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Pew Charitable Trust have a health impact project that provides funding to different states and entities to promote the use of HIA. So luckily we were awarded funds to conduct an HIA in Massachusetts. And so we wanted to use those funds to really come up with, as Allison said, it's important to set those goals in advance. Our overall goal was to meet the directives of transportation reform. We're going to use this money to figure out what it is that we're supposed to be doing and who we're supposed to be doing it with. So the goal of the proposed transportation-related HIA project was to work together, so figure out how we all work together, public health and transportation people, energy and environmental affairs folks, and community representatives. And so thus we embarked on this process to pilot a health impact assessment for a proposed transportation project, because, you know, transportation planners are sort of like, well, what are you going to do to slow us down? Are you going to make us work even more? Is it going to cost more money? How are we going to do that? So we thought this could be a pilot. It would serve as a vehicle for training all of the collective staffs that then have to do these HIAs going forward. And then importantly, it would provide a framework for us to really decide which transportation projects really would benefit from an HIA. The example I often use is there's a bridge not too far from where I live, just south of Boston. And, you know, that bridge was a beautiful old bridge. You could walk over it. It went over an area called the Four River, which is where there are a number of communities that join together. It was an old cement bridge that I, you know, when I used to take my boat under it, I ducked to see if pieces of cement were falling down. It needed to be taken down. And so they are building a new bridge, but at considerably less cost, they're building this erector set type bridge. And it's not going to be the beautiful old picture postcard bridge that you normally see. I don't think that's going to benefit from an HIA. That's just a local fight. People don't want an ugly bridge. I have to be honest, when I went under that bridge in my boat, I never saw anyone walking over it. So even though people are saying, oh, it's a beautiful, we need to promote walkability. Well, no one was walking on that bridge before. So again, I think that's not going to benefit from an HIA. This project is going to benefit from an HIA. This is the McGrath Highway. And basically the reason this HIA was called Groundy McGrath is because we're literally going to bring this road down to the ground. This is a picture, I don't know how well you can see, but on the far right-hand side of this slide, it is really traffic congested, and this isn't even at rush hour. So everybody uses this as a cut-through. If you get stuck on Route 93, right, you're coming in town, it's like, oh, okay, get off and run down McGrath, and then you get back into Boston faster. And no one in Somerville, Mass., that's home to McGrath Highway, really appreciates that. So, in our conduct of the HIA, we looked at several different sets of baseline conditions to make some decisions. One was demographic and socioeconomic conditions. We also wanted to look at vulnerable populations. Somerville is a very diverse community. And we wanted to look at baseline health information. The most important thing on this slide that I think to call your attention to is that Somerville folks are significantly younger on the whole than the state as a whole. The median age in Massachusetts as a state is just about 39 years old, and in Somerville it's about 31 years old. For the most part, the median income isn't too far different, although there are some neighborhoods and many close to the McGrath Highway where the median income is lower. And I think that one of the biggest differences is that the percent of foreign-born persons in Somerville is quite different than Massachusetts, and the percent of people where language other than English spoken at home is different as well. This is something I'm pretty proud of because I had the opportunity to be at a breakfast meeting this morning with the U.S. Administrator for U.S. EPA, Gina McCarthy, and I'm proud because she and I wrote the environmental justice policy together many years ago. And so this was a project we got to apply the EJ criteria to. And that basically is focused on income, minority populations, foreign-born, English proficiency, and education. And so those criteria help define which areas are most important to focus on in terms of environmental justice. And when you see that heavy red, that's exactly what we're talking about. That's the epicenter, if you will, of environmental justice and areas we should be concerned about. I put this slide up not because it's busy, but because I wanted to show, keeping in line with our talk, the importance of partnerships, I wanted to basically just go down that middle slide. So look at who we got data for from, health data from for this HIA. So the Center for Health Information and Analysis, we looked at behavioral risk factor surveillance survey data. We looked at environmental health, public health tracking portal. We looked at our partners in community health and prevention and injury data, fatality data. And we even looked at health data from Mass Department of Transportation. They have fatality data due to motor vehicle accidents. this next slide, too, it just shows some of what we looked at in terms of baseline health data. And the thing that I think was most striking about looking at the health data really has to do with the fact that as a group of folks, I think the staff in the Bureau of Environmental Health and staff in the Bureau of Community Health and Prevention were struck by the fact that if you look at adult diabetes rates for Middlesex County, where Somerville is home to, they're slightly lower rates of diabetes than the state as a whole. But if you look at the children who live there, the children who ultimately will benefit from changing this transportation picture, right now, almost 44% of children who live in Somerville are considered overweight or obese. They are headed for type 2 diabetes, and that compares to the statewide average of 32%. So we needed to do something about that. So what did we look at in this HIA? We looked at air quality, obviously what are public health benefits and impacts associated with air pollution concentrations from vehicles and technology changes. We wanted to look at noise. You know, if you're going to take a very noisy highway and bring it down to neighborhoods, what's that going to do to the people who live there? We wanted to look at mobility and connectivity. And what the public health impacts and benefits associated with changes for pedestrians and bicyclists and mode shift from auto to walking. I mean, we really need to get this population, particularly the population of kids, walking. We looked at public safety, what are the public health impacts or benefits associated with changes in injuries and fatalities and motor vehicle collisions. Importantly, looking at land use and economic development, access to goods such as grocery stores, pharmacies, housing and affordable housing, and including the possible gentrification of this area and displacement. If we make it too expensive, then the people who live there now won't be able to live there anymore, and we're going to change the face of that neighborhood. We wanted to look at land use, such as Inner Belt or Brick Bottom. Those are neighborhoods. The Brick Bottom is a neighborhood, but these are two different types of highway designs. And then availability and access to parks, open space, and community paths. And so I'm not going to go through all of these, but the major findings that we thought were important is that all future alternatives, no matter what we do with McGrath and bringing it down, all future projects alternatives would result in significant reductions in traffic-related air pollution, but that's largely attributable to advancements in motor vehicle emission standards and such. that future assessment of health impacts and benefits of the proposed project alternative should be conducted once a more robust project-specific set of tasks is done. For those of you who aren't familiar, I learned a lot about the transportation world. I now know there's a huge difference between a transportation study and a transportation project. Who knew? But we found out fast. So the study is just kind of getting their feet wet. What's going to happen? When it goes on to a project, that's when the rubber hits the road, if you will, and that's when we think we need to do more of this work targeting HIA-specific findings. De-elevation of the highway is anticipated to result in an increase in ground-level exposure to traffic-related air pollution, and therefore we think a series of mitigation measures are important. So, for example, locating the bike paths and walking paths much further away from the highway area to the extent that we can, and then through use of the appropriate shrubbery, having larger leaves to catch air pollution as it falls, things like that, installation of barriers and more planting of trees. And so we also think that further exploration of air pollution impacts has to be done, too, once the plans are better underway from a project versus a study. And that although detailed designs of all four alternatives have not been developed, it's anticipated that all future pedestrian and bicycling networks will conform to complete streets. That's a goal that our transportation agency has already said they will meet, and so we know that will happen. And then we will incorporate high-quality design elements associated with active transportation. And existing health data sources, such as the Public Health Tracking Portal, now provide publicly available data for people to do these types of assessments. Therefore, it doesn't have to be the health department. It could be one of our partner agencies. It could be MassDOT. It could be any one of a number of groups using this. In terms of recommendations, the Central Transportation Planning staff will update the travel survey data and model used to estimate emissions in the travel demand model. And as a result, we think a sensitivity analysis needs to be done once things are further along to determine if major changes in the model output will occur. As far as noise goes, although the screening level analysis of noise impacts in an area with the highest predicted travel volumes would be expected with a de-elevated highway, a more comprehensive analysis must be done so that we can determine where those sensitive receptors are and whether we need to do more in terms of mitigation. In terms of public safety, efforts to support reduce travel speeds, sound familiar, Beth? And volumes on both the de-elevated highway and in nearby neighborhoods will decrease injuries and fatalities. And developing and promoting plans with local law enforcement should help ensure that safety along bike paths and walking ways. Importantly, we think that the use of land use and economic development is a critical area. Given that the study area is currently classified as an environmental justice community, it's critical that long-term plans involve the current residents so that we can ensure that there's affordability of goods and services, stabilization of cost of rental apartments, and employment opportunities are made available. Let's get the people who have been suffering with all of this transportation work in their area to be amongst the biggest benefactors of the work that will be done. So just summarize quickly, based on the data reviewed for the Grounding McGrath HIA, the two optimal alternatives are the Boulevard Road Diet alternative and Inner Belt because they offer the greatest opportunities for mobility and access. We believe this will really change this neighborhood in a positive way. And planning and implementing this HIA provided an opportunity, as Allison said, for input on public health. But also for all of these agencies, public health, environment, and transportation agencies, to familiarize ourselves with data, terminology, and overall transportation planning policies. I will say that one of my greatest moments during the training for this HIA was having the guy from transportation paying more attention to the trainer than I was at the time when she was asking if there were any data sets available. And he raised his hand and said, "Hey, Suzanne, what about that public health tracking portal you were always talking about?" So he actually knew what it was, and he's been on our site. So following a public comment and release, we revised the HIA draft document and made it available to all parties interested in the Grounding McGrath study and the HIA initiatives that were included in the transportation reform law. And now is a really exciting time for us. I've been saying for a long time that as an environmental health person, if anybody's familiar with the Mass Environmental Policy Act or at the national level, the National Environmental Policy Act, environmental health programs have been used as a wedge for far too long. We get asked to step into a NEPA or MEPA-approved project after it's already gone through a host of activities. Someone has spent $15 million, and either a community that doesn't like what they think is going to be there asks us to do a study, or a developer asks us to do something. And in the end, everybody just fights louder and hotter and then uses us as a vehicle to continue that fight. We don't have to do that. And I think through the HIA process, we're going to see through this next level of review, which is MEPA, whether or not having done this HIA addresses some of those health issues right up front before we even have to have that process delayed. And that we will present findings and recommendations to the Healthy Transportation Compact in December. So we're going back before the compact. We will tell them what we did, and we will present to them which projects we think would most benefit from having an HIA done for transportation in Massachusetts. Thank you very much.